공식적으로 5인 이상의
We also strongly recommend that people should refrain from having a social gathering of 5 or more people nationwide.
The people of many nations are hearing edicts like that from South Korea. This is Wednesday, the 23rd of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the UK has cut off from many places after a new strain of virus is found. The last continent of Earth that was COVID-free is not COVID-free anymore. A Hong Kong family decides they have had enough, and a tough go of it for migrants in Pakistan. That and more on today's VOA Asia. South Korea Tuesday moved to shut down all ski resorts and winter tourist spots in a bid to stop the novel coronavirus spreading as a third wave of the pandemic proves much tougher to contain in the densely populated region of the capital city. Flora Bradley Watson has more.
South Korea is battling a new outbreak of coronavirus infections, putting its no lockdown strategy to the test. The surge has rattled the country that for much of 2020 was held up as a COVID-19 success story. On Tuesday, it moved to shut down all ski resorts and winter tourist spots from this Thursday until early January. There's also a ban on gatherings of more than 4 people in Seoul and its surrounding areas, though funerals and weddings are exempt. Disinfection officer Yoon Tae-ho said people should heed the rules across the whole country.
We also strongly recommend that people should refrain from having a social gathering of 5 or more people nationwide. Considering infection cases among family members and friends, restaurants need to ban a reservation and an entry for 5 or more people. If they breach these measures, they will be fined.
The national government has so far resisted calls to impose Phase 3 in the country's anti-COVID-19 plans. That would mean the toughest category of social distancing rules, essentially locking down Asia's 4th largest economy. South Korea announced its highest number of daily deaths on Monday with 24 fatalities, and there were a record number of new cases on Sunday. This third wave of the virus has been particularly hard for contact tracers to get on top of, as it emerged in the densely populated capital region.
That was Flora Bradley Watson reporting. Meanwhile, the world's longest streak without a local coronavirus infection has been broken. Taiwanese health officials say a woman in her 30s has tested positive after coming into contact earlier this month with a New Zealand-born pilot who was infected while traveling overseas. The woman is Taiwan's first locally transmitted COVID-19 case since April 12th, a stretch of 253 days. Taiwan has been pointed to as a success story in how to respond to the pandemic, with just 766 total cases and just 7 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Research Center. The island began checking on the passengers on flights from Wuhan, the Chinese city where the pandemic began in the early days of the outbreak, for fever and pneumonia symptoms. And Antarctica has lost its designation as the last continent on Earth without a COVID-19 infection. At least 36 people stationed at a Chilean research base in the icy continent recently tested positive for the novel coronavirus, including 26 members of the Chilean army and 10 civilian contractors. We invite you to read more in our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Over 40 countries have imposed travel bans on people arriving from Britain after the government announced last week it had detected a new, more contagious strain of the coronavirus. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, the restrictions have caused major disruption as Britain struggles to contain this latest outbreak.
Cut off from much of Europe, chaos at major ports. Britain has been effectively quarantined by its neighbours. Dozens of countries elsewhere have banned travel to and from the country, including India, Canada and Russia. Britain's Prime Minister said Monday the government was trying to persuade European allies to end the blockade.
We in the UK fully understand the anxieties of our friends about COVID, their anxieties about the new variant. But it's also true that we believe the risks of transmission by a solitary driver sitting alone in the cab are really very low. And so we hope to make progress as fast as we possibly can.
The restrictions are being felt most acutely at Dover, around 10,000 trucks use the rail and ferry crossing to the French port of Calais every day. Among those stranded is Polish trucker Stanislav Olbrich.
I have 3 children and wife, and they need me to come for Christmas. Christmas in Poland is a very special holiday. It's bind with religion and traditional. It's for Polish people, it's very hard to be away on Christmas. So this situation cost me very hard.
British exports are directly affected, while imports could be hit if European drivers refuse to travel. British supermarkets have warned of possible shortages. Britain announced late last week that it had identified a mutant strain of the coronavirus, which is 70% more transmissible. That prompted other countries to impose travel bans. The European Commission Tuesday recommended that all non-essential travel to and from Britain should be discouraged, but added that transport workers such as truck drivers should be exempt and that flight and rail bans should be lifted. EU member states are not obliged to follow the advice, and talks between Britain and other EU states are ongoing.
The current flight ban has been taken as a precaution. Other restrictions on other travel options from the United Kingdom are currently being considered.
Meanwhile, over 16 million people in southern Britain, including London, have been put in the highest lockdown tier, with household mixing and non-essential travel prohibited.
I think that the new strain of the virus is definitely concerning, and I think it is the right decision, but I just wish it would have been made a few days earlier.
Scientists say the new variant of the virus makes the rollout of vaccines even more critical. Over 500,000 Britons have now received their first dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Meanwhile, it's just days before Britain is due to leave the Brexit transition period on January 1st, with no trade deal yet agreed. Deal or no deal, Britain's EU exit is predicted to cause further trade and travel disruption. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
U.S. officials are considering a requirement for all travelers from Britain to offer proof they've tested negative for COVID-19. News outlets say the White House Coronavirus Task Force met Monday and discussed crafting a rule that passengers prove they have taken a negative test within 48 or 72 hours before leaving Britain. The proposed rule comes as more than 40 countries have suspended travelers from Britain in response to a dramatic rise of infections because of that new strain of the virus sweeping across the country. The United States has not restricted flights from Britain, however. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he has asked airlines flying into his state from Britain to make all passengers take a COVID-19 test before they get on the plane. 3 airlines, Virgin Atlantic, British Airways, and Delta Airlines, have agreed to Governor Cuomo's request. In the western United States, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State Monday ordered a 14-day quarantine for all travelers entering the state from Britain and South Africa, where a similar mutation of COVID-19 has been identified. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said Monday it is possible the new variant of the novel coronavirus is already in the United States. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Every mid-autumn festival, Asa Lai and her daughters make mooncakes for the extended family. This year will be their last one in Hong Kong before the Lais uproot and emigrate to Scotland. Libby Hogan reports.
This is the last time the Lai family celebrated Mid-Autumn Festival in Hong Kong, making mooncakes together. Aza and Willie say they no longer recognise the city they grew up in. After the demands of millions of people marching together last year were dismissed by the city's government, and Beijing imposed a sweeping national security law in June on Hong Kong that China says will maintain public safety and bring order after last year's anti-government protests. Officials also are adamant that the rights and freedoms of citizens remain intact. A Hong Kong government spokesman said last year's, quote, violent protests and anarchy on the streets may be one of the motivations for people choosing to emigrate, along with job, schooling and business opportunities or other personal reasons. But critics say the law further erodes autonomy in the city, and it's been followed by a relentless crackdown on dissent. The Lai family say the response to the protests has brought uncertainty into their lives and pushed them to emigrate to Scotland.
Us leaving is not because of politics as such, but we're leaving because politics is now impacting our lives. We're leaving Hong Kong because it isn't ideal for our children's future.
Aza and Willie were filled with hope that the city would turn towards greater democracy last year as they marched with their children during the 2 million strong June rally. But authorities dug in their heels. Police have arrested roughly 10,000 people in relation to the demonstrations.
If the youth have to worry and have to fear to speak out, then this isn't a suitable place. The best I can do right now is bring them to a more suitable environment. What's incredibly sad about this is I can only help my own children.
Hong Kong, a former British colony, was promised wide-ranging freedoms when it was returned to Chinese rule in 1997. Since the imposition of the new security law, authorities have removed some pro-democracy books in libraries, banned certain songs, raided a newsroom, and more. The lies are among thousands of Hong Kongers looking to escape Beijing's tightening grip. Initial indications show this may be a second wave of migration, similar to the decade leading up to the 1997 handover. They are sacrificing a comfortable life and rebuilding it in a place they've never been before.
This house is the result of our hardship. Together we've experienced highs and lows, especially these few years with our third child, we've experienced some lows. But I hope we can continue on through the hardship and the path ahead.
After 3 days of packing and sifting through years of memories, they say their final goodbyes.
I'm quite nervous. It's not the same feeling as going on holiday. We're going to such an unfamiliar place. Who knows what will happen and what challenges we face?
It's not a farewell. Just see you soon.
That was Libby Hogan reporting. This is VOA Asia. Many refugees who end up in Pakistan are having a very difficult time. Mohammed Saqib looked into that. His report is narrated by Bezan Hamdar.
At just 13, Nadeem Iqbal had already migrated around three different countries. Hoping for a better life, his family migrated from Bihar, India to Bangladesh and finally settled in Pakistan. Today, he is an assistant professor at Sir Syed University of Engineering and Technology in Karachi. But because he was not a Pakistani citizen, Iqbal faced many challenges early on.
In the beginning, I did various work. I sold combs. I sold lawnmowers near a supermarket. I sold watches. It was a livelihood, but it was very painful and difficult days for me.
Despite difficulties, Iqbal was able to complete his engineering studies and began teaching electrical engineering in Pakistan. Iqbal isn't alone. Since Bangladesh declared its independence from Pakistan in 1971, millions of former East Pakistan residents migrated to Karachi for a better life. Many of them still don't qualify for citizenship, as some nationalist parties think that the issuance of citizenship on humanitarian grounds could lead to open floodgates of refugees in the country.
I'm very worried. I can't do anything anywhere. I can't get a job. There's nothing else I can do. We're very worried about our ID cards.
My brother's national identity card has been withheld for almost 5 years by authorities, so he can't get a job, he can't get salary, he can't open a bank account, his wife can't get an ID card, and their children are facing problems getting enrolled in a school.
According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, there are 1.4 million registered Afghan refugees in Pakistan. But there is no record available of refugees from Myanmar, Iran, Bangladesh, and India. The government estimates they are in millions. For Mohammed Saqib in Karachi, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Do your best to stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.